Welcome to the For the Reef podcast. Each week we bring our fish nerd conversations from the fish room floor to your living room. We try to bridge the gap between the saltwater aquarium hobby and coral reef conservation. Now, here are your hosts, fisheries biologist and founder of For the Reef Apparel, Mitch Dender, with local fish store owner and first responder, Ian Bell.
There we go. We're live.
Back again for another episode of the For the Reef podcast. Tonight we're going to talk about what's been going on with the Cayman Eco Divers. We're going to check back in on some of the things that Ian's been up to with his installing very elaborate tanks. We also have some exciting news to talk about with the Canadian Expo.
Yeah, we've been off for a while. A lot of things have been happening. My whole family got COVID. Summer came. It's we've had a little break, but we're ready to get back at it.
Yeah, you're also in the middle of a big move.
Yeah, I'm moving my entire shop from where it is now to a new location, and it's no small task. So Things are a bit hectic these days.
It seems like it's always the status quo for you, Ian.
Yeah, well, I got a new opportunity in the town that I live in, nicer space, you know, a bunch of opportunities for the business I just couldn't pass up. So, You know, why not add one more thing to the plate? So I'm physically moving the entire store into a different town, and that, you know, equates to about five different aquatic systems and all the stuff that goes with it. So, you know, if you listen to our How to Move a Tank podcast that we did back in early spring there, take that and times it by about 10, and that's what we're in the middle of right now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Are you transferring over, like, before you decide to move the store, did you kind of like sell everything off, or are you like,
summer is always quieter anyways, especially this year after COVID. I found, you know, as soon as the restrictions were down and the weather got nice, everybody went outside and you just didn't see anybody. So I let stock drop right down, because with this move coming, the less I have on hand, the easier it is to do it all. I have enough to move just with equipment, let alone livestock and whatnot as well. So we've let it go down to almost nothing as far as livestock goes. So mostly what I have left is a bit of corals from the coral tank, and I have the livestock and whatnot in the display tank in the store. So still enough, but not as much as it could have been. So the fish system's already been moved, and we're almost done resurrecting that on the other end. We were just working on the plumbing this afternoon. And the next thing to go will be the display tank, and then the rest of them. So I've got, you know, a couple more weeks to get everything moved out of there before the new tenant moves into my current space.
Yeah.
So I'm under a little bit of pressure trying to do my day-to-day services and installs and whatnot, and then do this on top of it. So my days are very long right now.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine. I'm just removing my tank. When we moved in here, I can't even wrap my head around how much work it's for you to.
It's just on a larger scale. I'm doing it very similarly to what you did. We're moving all the tanks and everything first. When I do the display tank, I'm going to do it the exact same way you did. I'm going to have a big bin, the same bin you used, and I'm going to put all my stuff in it and move the tank, get it set up, get it running, and then move the livestock over after. No real differences, just more of it.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty exciting. Well, I'm excited to see the new store, and
we're pretty stoked about it. We're going to also be adding, you know, some freshwater, some reptiles, some dog and cat and stuff. We're moved out to the town that I live in, and there's not a lot of options here. And the response I've been getting from the town and the area so far is pretty awesome. So we're really excited about the change and the growth and, you know, something new and exciting. It's just right now it is a lot of work.
So you're thinking in the new store, your focus will still be saltwater aquarium stuff?
Absolutely. The majority of the store, like everything that's in the store now, is coming with me. So the whole store is being transplanted. It will still be our specialty. We'll still be doing installs and service and things like that. We're just adding to that.
Nice. Is it a bigger space or is it?
Eventually it will be. I have about half of the available building right now. The current owners are still using the other part for storage. Mm-hmm. As they sort through their stuff, then we'll be able to expand and I'll have more space and I'll also have a workshop and storage area, which is what we really wanted so that we can work on some of our custom built stuff before we take it to site and be able to sort of, you know, prepare things without having to do it in the floor of the shop.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot in the works.
Yeah. And if you follow Sustainable Marine Canada or any of Ian's social media type stuff, you'll see some of these builds that he's putting together, and you're really making a name for yourself in the aquarium servicing industry, because I'm seeing some of these pictures and I like can't even.
Yeah. The one that I'm working on right now is in a brand new home build, and we were involved in the process of them designing this house before even their architects were. I think it was us and the home automation guys, I'm told. Before they even had pen to paper, we were involved and they built everything around us. So we've got custom fish room and they planned all the reinforcements for the floor and all of that stuff. So the builders that are there, they just laugh every time they see me. I think they kind of thought like, who's this guy? Okay, the fish tank, right? Is going to have goldfish. Like, what's this all about? And now they look at it, they're like, wow. Like I get a different sort of vibe from them when I walk into the building now.
Yeah. That's like Steve Callahan level stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, on my end, my reef tank has been much of the same. I'm still battling hair algae. I don't know, you got any hot tips for hair algae? Because I feel like I've tried everything and it's...
Just keep on top of it, battle it. You know, you can use a bit of your water parameters if you want, but it's probably more, you know, herbivores, lots of herbivores, and manual removal. You just got to keep ahead of it.
Yeah. I think my mistake was when I first saw it in the tank, I didn't react fast enough.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key with it, is you can't let it get out of control.
It's like Aptasia and anything else. You got to react to it when you see it. And we're all guilty of that. Mm-hmm. But if you let it get away from you, it becomes a bigger problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, I mean, I've all the herbivores you can imagine I've put into the tank. I had that sea hare, everything, all times different tangs. I've got a lawnmower blenny in there. So I've tried to get enlisted as much help as I can. And then I get in there about realistically probably every 2 weeks. And I just manually remove as much as I possibly can, scrub it with toothbrush. And then where the real, you know, straw that broke the camel's back was I let my chato reactor, or sorry, my refugium really slow down for a little while, which allowed the hair algae to really take hold. But now the refugium's really starting to come back. I'm keeping on the regular water changes and seems like I'm starting to make some headway on the hair algae. It doesn't seem to really affect anything. It's just ugly. Oh, lost your audio there, Ian.
Well, sorry about that. I forgot to unmute myself. Okay. Another thing that's going on right now is we were approached by Grant Crossman from the Canadian Aquatic Expo and Canadian Pet Expo to be a podcaster of choice at their event coming up in September. And that's going to be pretty awesome. Grant's been doing the Pet Expos and Reptile Expos for a long time. Anybody that is been to those knows that they're really big and well run, and now he's added an aquatic expo to it. It's going to be freshwater and saltwater. It's new, so this will be sort of the first kick at the can with that. And I think for the saltwater folks, we all know that unfortunately the Niagara Coral Show is no longer, and I think this is going to be a great opportunity to pick up where that left off and really expand that and move forward. So if anybody out there is a vendor and they want to be involved with the Aquatic Expo, shoot me a message because we can hook you up. He's really looking to launch this, and there's ways to make it viable for you. Let's just say that. So shoot us a message and we'll get you hooked up with Grant, and we can really turn this Aquatic Expo into a show similar to what you see in the States, like we've all been wanting to have up here.
Yeah.
It'll be September was it September 17th and 18th in Toronto at the International Center, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. Mitch and I will both be there, and we're going to have a guest that we're super stoked to have coming with us as well.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be a part of it. I'm you know, I think that it's going to be amazing to be back at a trade show, you know, with all of the fish nerds. Really cool with Canadian Expo to bring in the aquarium hobby. I think that's a great move, and it's just awesome all the way around.
Yeah, I think it's a really good opportunity. Grant has these shows down pat. He knows how to pull them off. He's got the location, you know, and everybody's been saying, like, can we have a big show? And he's got the sort of experience and backing to pull this off. I've been speaking to some of the vendors in the States on his behalf. Some of the larger ones won't necessarily make it this year, but because they found out a little bit late about it and just coming out of COVID and whatnot. But next year, I anticipate being able to help them bring up some of the big names that we've been looking to see up here. So that'll be awesome. So don't miss out. And if you are a vendor, please hit us up and we'd love to see you there.
100%. Do you want to hint or tell who our guest is going to be? Or?
Sure. We, you know, through the conversations with Grant, we, you know, he'd asked us to do, we're going to do some podcasts live there. We're going to interview some of the other vendors that are there and wander around. We'll probably do a bit of a live tour of the show a couple times and who's there and what's going on. And one to the other, when we did the Niagara Coral Show, what was always my thing, we like to raise money and have everything that we do sponsor the Cayman Eco Divers Reef Foundation. And we told Grant about that, and I suggested, well, hey, how about I get Aaron on to do like a live webcast for the show? And he was up for that, and he's up for sponsoring the foundation. So when I reached out to Aaron about it, he got super excited. It turns out he's doing another conference in Florida the following week. I said, hey, why don't I come to Canada? So sweet. So Aaron and his wife, Brittany, are going to be at the show for the weekend with us, hanging out. And they will be doing a presentation on everything they're doing down there in the Cayman Islands for reef restoration. And you can come chat with them at the show. They'll be around our booth at the stage or at my booth for Sustainable Marine Canada. And we'll be available to chat, tell you about what we're doing.
Yeah, it's going to be so great.
I'm pretty excited to have them.
Yeah, I would have never thought that it would be feasible to have them come down for the show. And here they are. So it's going to be great to see them.
You know what? I think it's like everybody else. They've been stuck on an island during COVID for a couple of years. I think they're excited to get out. They're going to take the opportunity to visit family and stuff. They're looking to come and stretch their legs a little bit like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually got to see them in April of this year. Yeah. So we wanted to do this podcast and talk about that trip that my wife and I had down to Cayman Islands. So in April, I went down there. I had some time off in between jobs. I was starting a new job. So I decided to take the opportunity to go down and volunteer with the Eco Divers. So Kelly and I flew down there. Basically right before we left for our trip, we found out that Kelly was pregnant. I don't know if you knew that, Ian.
I picked up on that. You're like, oh yeah, we're going down, but you know, Kelly's got a medical issue. She can't dive. I'm like, yeah, she's knocked up. You're not fooling me.
Yeah. So it's been a while now. Pretty excited. We got a little girl coming.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, you know, It did suck for Kelly that she couldn't go on the dives, but you know what? It's not worth the potential risk. But anyway, so we were excited. We got down there. We stayed in the Sunset. It wasn't the Sunset. What was that place called again, Ian?
Oh, Harborview.
Harborview. Yeah. Yeah. If you guys are ever going down to the Cayman Islands, Harborview is a pretty cool spot to stay. It was kind of like,
it's kind of a little local secret. It's not a big resort. It's run by a Caymanian family, and it's right on the ocean. It's kind of a little really nicely kept secret.
Yeah. So we kind of had everything we needed there. We just rented a car and we linked up with Aaron and Brittany, and day one, me and Aaron were out in the water, and he was showing me the the coral trees and the coral nurseries. And basically, I guess I'll start with what we were doing. So right now, he's having issues with, in one of their locations, with the upwelling from near the sand, which is causing his anchors that hold these nursery structures in place to float away and not stay in place. So when I'm saying these nursery structures, actually, Ian, if you want to play that first video of us floating the PVC tree up, I'm sorry to those people that are just listening in, but if you see this video, I'll kind of describe it. Basically, we have a PVC, I'll play it back, sorry. So here's Aaron, he's got his float and we're attaching it to this PVC tree that we constructed on land, and it's tied down to a couple kitty litter boxes that are filled with cement. And when he releases this PVC tree, it's going to float up to a certain height that he wants the coral nursery site to be in. And then from there, you can fragment corals, bring them, hang them onto this coral nursery site for them to spawn. So this was one of the things that we were working on the first day, basically bringing these cement kitty litter boxes out into the water with the buoys and the PVC tree in order to start setting all of those up. And it was incredible. The first day, the first dive, we go down and I've never seen a rooster fish big. I've never even seen a rooster fish a lot like it in person. I've known of what they were, but I've heard that in Florida, the rooster fish, they don't get very big anymore just from the amount of spearfishing that goes on. But in the Cayman Islands, nobody spearfishes them, so they get huge. So the first thing, we go down and I see this massive rooster fish following a I'm talking about a hogfish. So the hogfish, which looks like a big pig, was following around a spotted eagle ray. And spotted eagle ray was just kind of kicking through the sand, and the hogfish was following behind him, picking through the sand as the eagle ray was making some plumes as it was looking for food. It was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. And actually, the shirt I'm wearing right now happens to have a picture of a hogfish on it. So pretty cool. So that was our kind of our first day. Second day, we did kind of the same thing. He brought me out to actually see the coral trees, where we went out there and we scrubbed the trees. I keep calling them trees, but they're the nursery sites. We went out to the nursery sites. These ones were the more established ones. And we were out there to basically provide some maintenance, which meant scrubbing them clean of different algaes that grew on the coral polyps and around the coral polyps. So they're covered in fire coral and stuff like that, but basically we were just trying to clean up the site a little bit while we were standing there. I don't know if Ian, you want to play that second video? So in this video, you can see these coral nursery sites, and this was so cool to see this type of thing. So these are staghorn corals. They're one of the critically endangered species that Aaron is working so hard to bring back. And from this nursery site, which I don't know if I get close enough with the video, but you can see the algaes and things like that are growing on the PVC parts of the tree in the nursery. And we were just there scrubbing them up. But these corals have grown so much in the last few years. I think he was saying that this one was 2 years old or something, and they came from like 1 to 2 inch frags. So pretty insane growth. If you think of, you know, how fast corals grow in our aquariums, this is like perfect conditions. Obviously, these corals are just exploding with growth. And then one other cool thing that we noticed while that Aaron was describing to me and I saw while I was out there was there's this kind of cone of influence that happens from the nursery site. So basically you have your nursery, which is filled with all these different, individual corals, staghorn corals. They then, because they're nice and close to each other, it gives them an opportunity to spawn. And from this cone of influence, there was a whole bunch of coral babies that were starting to spread down current from where the nursery site was. So natural propagation coming off of these nursery sites. And that was really, really cool to see, because that's kind of proof of concept. It's saying, sure, we can put together these nursery sites and we can get the corals to grow on them, but can we use those nursery sites to actually naturally propagate corals across the area? So that was really incredible. Funny enough, that dive I actually got narcosis. Ian, have you ever gotten narcosis?
Maybe a little bit. Unconfirmed.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've done a fair bit of diving. I'm not like a 10,000 dive guy or anything like that, but I mean, I've done some decent amounts of diving. So I guess I kind of got a little cocky, and you know, I'm scrubbing the tree and Aaron looks at me and it's like, how much air do you have? So I said to him that I got about 1900 PSI, which is plenty of air. So we're going to go down to the wall. And if you ever heard of the Cayman Islands, I thought this was the coolest thing about the Cayman Islands, was that you have at 100 feet, you get to go down to 100 feet and you can see a lot of really cool things, especially some big sponges. But there's this massive drop, and I can't remember exactly how deep it was, but I want to say it was like 3,000 feet off this wall.
It's pretty substantial. Yeah. It's very, very deep.
Yeah. Because like Aaron was explaining, the Cayman Islands are basically built from coral, just millions of years of corals growing up on top of each other, which creates this really steep cliff face. And so I'm on this cliff, you know, at the 100 feet part. He also told me that around the 200 feet mark, there's the sponge belt that goes around the Cayman Islands. And I think that area, and if you see him at the Canadian Expo, ask him yourself so I don't mess up the story. But he said right around 200 feet is where the sponge belt is. And that sponge belt basically are like, you know, really, really, really old sponges that are the size of living rooms. And they're there because they were protected during, you know, glacial stages and stuff. So those sponges have just, you know, been there for thousands of years, potentially. So I couldn't really see down that far, but the change in the ecosystem around 100 feet was exceptional. Like, it went from, you know, brain corals and stuff to more fan corals, huge schools of triggerfish. And I have no clue which triggerfish they were. I would say they compare probably to the Niger trigger that we have in the aquarium hobby, the blue one, except for these ones.
Yeah. If it's the one I'm thinking of, they're usually black with like sort of a white line across the top of their fins.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was like,
I forget the name of it.
Yeah. There was schools of them. And I just remember just being mesmerized. So here I am swimming around, just being blown away. And then all of a sudden I look at my air and I'm pretty low air. So I'm like, what the heck? And usually I check my air all the time. And I can control my breathing pretty well. And I thought I would be I would be fine. I look at Aaron, he looks at me with like this, we need to go back. But Aaron, because he's like basically a pirate, he's basically laughing under the water at my panic, but he knew that he had the situation under control. So basically he buddy breathed with me. We went all the way back. He had loads of air because he's a real, you know, master diver compared to me. And we got back out and got back to the surface. And he said to me, he's like, Mitch, how are you feeling? It's like, yeah, you feel a little narked out. And I'm like, no, like I feel totally fine. I'm like, sorry, I was just kind of watching everything that was going on. I'm sorry, I messed up our dive. I just kind of lost track of where my air was at. And he's like, oh, okay. He's like, well, you ready to go back down and we'll just take the reef back in just to get out of the wake. For sure. We get back. We're then sitting having lunch after this dive, and I started thinking about it, and I was like, I was definitely narked out. And he's like, oh yeah, 100%. So basically, if you've never felt that feeling, it's equivalent of like laughing gas that you get at the dentist. So you're just kind of like just happy, and which, you know what, it would be a dangerous situation if I wasn't with the right person in that case. So I'm glad he was there. And it also highlighted to me, you know, that I need to pay more attention. And now I'm even looking at further dive training just to, you know, focus or sharpen my skills a bit.
Yeah, it can really sneak up on you. Aaron's an excellent diver. For example, he'll be out tonight watching the coral spawning, which they are pretty sure is going to happen tonight. I've never seen anything like this guy. We'll all go out there as a group, and most of us, 45 minutes to an hour, we all got to come back in. He'll be out there for a couple of hours. He's master at controlling his breath and his oxygen usage. To the point where we're all sort of like, at one point, I'm like, when do we become concerned about Aaron, right? But we can still see his little flashlight out there, and we know he's gone. But he's really good at that. But you're right. It can really sneak up on you. And I've been to the wall. I've been down to 140 feet. But you got to be checking your air all the time, because you're right. It really can creep up on you quickly.
Oh, so yeah.
It's important to go with someone that knows what they're doing when you're going to go down to that sort of level.
Yep. And after... you know, I messed up on this dive. I was watching him, his air coming out, you know, after that. And you just see this like stream of micro bubbles coming out of him every time he's taking a breath. And it's like, man.
What he taught me to do was almost hum as you release your air, and it helps you control that release. So you're not right. just blowing it all out. So you're just sort of going, and just slowly, and it made a big difference for me.
Yeah. So we did that. We did another dive after there, and then we ended up going back to his place for a day. And, there we were making the concrete to put into these kitty litter buckets. And going back to why we're using kitty litter buckets there was because in that one site location where this nursery structure was going, there was a lot of upwelling in the sand, which was causing the anchors to slip. So this case, it was better to have a weighted concrete anchor rather than something that would hold in the sand. So that was pretty cool. And actually it would be really awesome to follow up with Aaron one day and see this. But one of the coolest things I noticed about his place is on his property, he has this basically like a naturally occurring cave, which I don't know if it's a cave system or not. He didn't know either. Basically, it's like this cool rock structure that forms what looks like a pond. And when I was talking to him about it, he's like, yeah, he's like, I'm thinking I'm going to fill it in and make sure that it's all sealed. And then I'm going to put Frontosa in there. I was just like, oh, that's just something we don't get to do here in Ontario, keeping tropical fish out in our ponds, but that would be pretty sweet. But yeah, Aaron actually and Brittany actually posted yesterday, or I guess early this morning it was, about the coral spawning that's happening right now. So they were hoping to go tonight and see a mass spawn because they saw a small spawn last night, which was pretty cool.
Normally I would be there. We just weren't quite ready to go traveling just yet this year, but normally I go for the coral spawning, and that's what you'll get. Usually he'll have been going out probably for two or three nights already, just sitting out there in the dark for a couple hours waiting to see what happens. And usually is a good sign if you get just, you'll see like a little trickle the night before. So probably pretty good chance when they go out tonight, it'll be just like a snowstorm out there. It's so cool how it happens. You just be sitting there and said, bam, all of a sudden everything just lets go. And there's just all this stuff floating around you. It's pretty wicked. So then they're usually pretty stoked after that.
Oh yeah.
I've also had the chance to do those, put the coral trees out and tie the anchors and stuff like you did. And if anybody is listening, you're probably like, oh yeah, they just threw it all in a big boat and they threw it over and dove down. That's not how he does it. This is grassroots old school stuff. So you make these trees, which look, you know, they're a bunch of crossed pieces of PVC. He puts it on a kayak and we swim it out there and then we take it down. Like this is labor intensive stuff that they're doing there. It's not, you know, what you see on Discovery Channel. They just throw it over the edge. Like this is manual labor. It's no
oh, yeah.
to do. And there's lots of them that they've put out.
Yeah. Even the PVC trees we were doing with there's fiberglass rods, that cross through. Like that's the part that you're seeing there, and those, you know, we were sawing at those fiberglass rods in the Caymanian sun, and it's just pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool experience.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was basically, you know, the gist of the trip. It was just really, you know, with COVID and everything that's gone on over the last 2 years, it was just so difficult to try and actually get down there. So to finally get down there now and see it all for myself and to, you know, have a little micro impact, you know, it was pretty cool.
Well, I'm glad you guys finally got to go, because this is what we had always talked about. And I was trying to explain to you before your trip is, you know, some of these organizations out there have turned into corporations and they've become a little bit faceless and hard to sort of associate with. And that's not what the EcoDivers Foundation is. You can go, you can be involved, you can be part of it. Like, it's a volunteer based thing and it's making an impact. And it's a slightly different procedure than some of the other people are trying. And that's why he's going to this conference in Florida to share his successes and methodologies and stuff with some of the other stakeholders and islands in the Caribbean and sort of see, hey, there's another way of doing it. And this is what we're doing. And we've had A, B, and C successes because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the gist of the trip. One other cool thing that I noticed that came out recently on the side of conservation and aquarium hobby was the Dr. Callan, I think his name is, from Hawaii. Those guys out in Hawaii who did the yellow tangs, they actually just had success breeding the long-nosed butterfly.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, that's pretty awesome. They're doing some really cool things out there.
Yeah. Are you noticing from a supplier perspective, you're getting more options for captive bred fish?
Slowly. The only options really, I mean, clownfish or clownfish, there's been more access to biota stuff.
Yeah.
Which is because my wholesaler has now sort of built a relationship with them. So there's that access there. But it comes and goes depending on what's available and how much of it. So it's up and down. But yeah, there's definitely some cool stuff coming. Yeah. And I hear there's some interesting things coming out of Bali as well.
Really?
You're starting to see some, I think I just saw the other day, crossbred purple tangs and yellow tangs. And there's some other things going on that I forget all the different ones. But It still seems to be moving forward. It's not, you know, largely available on a large scale yet, but it's coming.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing, I guess, that would be kind of interesting is the aquaponics system I got going on downstairs. I've talked about it a bit in the past. I'm still messing around with it. I've got lots of challenges. So if you haven't heard about that system that I have going on downstairs, basically it's a big fiberglass trough attached to an IBC tote. In the IBC tote, there's a whole bunch of clay balls. In the fiberglass tote, there's fish. Right now I want to grow out some koi in there. I think koi are awesome and I want to keep them. And I think it's a cool place to keep them because, you know, you can really get up close with them and I don't have to worry about birds eating them. So I'm probably going to get some koi to grow out in there. And right now, vegetable wise, I have strawberries, celery's growing really well, kale. And this was cool. And I had an avocado seed. So I saw this video. It was like a TikTok actually, of this guy eats his avocado, takes the seed, sticks it in a wet envelope and leaves it for like a month, comes back, does this planting, blah, 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 plants an avocado tree from it. I was wondering if that would work in an aquaponic system because it's a perfect system. It basically floods the seed every 45 minutes. So I left it in an envelope. I took an avocado seed, put it in a wet envelope, left it there for, I think, like a month. After the month, took the seed out and brushed off all of like the hard shelling that's on the outside of the seed. And just stuck it into the clay pebbles of the aquaponics thing. And now I've got a avocado plant that's growing out of the aquaponics system. And who knows? I don't know if I'll ever get an avocado from it, but it's pretty neat to see how this system's working. I actually threw a bunch of antlers down into the sump section of the aquaponics system. So that part actually gets a ton of light. So I just put some artificial structures down there with a bubbler and now I have antlers that are breeding like out of control down there in that small section. We have the Windsor Aquarium Society here, which is kind of like my local club. And now like it's cool too. Pretty soon I'll be bringing them a whole bunch of antlers and
I'll have to get some from you myself.
Yeah, if you're dipping your toes back into the freshwater game.
You know, it's funny you brought up antlers and stuff. I was just watching a thing the other day. I saw a YouTube video where a guy was putting bins out in his backyard, and he's in the States, but like same sort of latitude as we are, and letting them breed all summer. I'm like, oh, I'm totally trying that.
Oh yeah.
I didn't know you could do that. It's so easy and low key to do. So next summer I'll definitely doing that.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I've done with the sump is I just put some antlers down there. They're live bears and they just are having a heyday down there. And the other thing fish I'm breeding right now is neon tetras. I'm sure you've heard of them before. They require warm water and really, really clean. So I have my RODI system that's set up for the saltwater tank. So all I'm really doing is I've got a 10-gallon tank with a basket from the dollar store that has all the little holes in the bottom, neon tetras inside, 100% RODI water with a sponge, like an old, established sponge. And these neon tetras are starting to drop eggs. So that's a cool, other little side thing I'm doing right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Because, why not have more things?
I was also paint my boat today.
Oh, look at that. Yeah. So you're out doing some fishing this weekend too. So,
yeah, we have a cool fish here. So depending on where people are from, you may not have ever heard of this fish, but steelhead, which is basically a migratory rainbow trout. So some rainbow trouts will stay in their streams and their tributaries, and they usually stay pretty small. Here in Lake Erie, we'll get these migratory rainbows that end up in the lake, and they feed out in the lake, so then they get massive. And my uncle and I got to get out there and catch some steelhead, and it was pretty awesome. They're a pretty wild fish.
So, yeah, it looked like a pretty good size. Must have been a pretty good fight.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I was doing with my little bit of free time, but I know you don't have any, so I won't even ask.
What's that?
Yeah.
But, maybe in a couple months I'll have some free time. Yeah, I'm hoping it all depends. If things go well with the move, then I'm going to really try like and make a last minute ditch effort to get down to MACNA and get some videos and see some stuff. And there's like a couple other trade shows up here I want to go to, but I can't really plan for anything right now. It all depends how this all goes as to whether I'm going to pull that off or not.
Sounds good. Yeah. So future episodes, we got a couple cool ideas lined up. I have a friend who's a mussel specialist, a biologist in Ontario. She's going to come on to the podcast and talk about mussel species and how all of that works. So a lot of people don't even realize that we have mussels whole bunch of different mussels that live around here, and it's just cool to hear her side and her take about those types of things. We also have Norb, who has a very, very extensive reef tank close by to me, and I got a chance to go see it. I'm like, Norb, you have got to come on the podcast to talk about this stuff. He is a engineer to a T. You look into his fish room and you're like, wow, the organization, the cleanliness, everything's just perfect. And builds this big, huge, beautiful system. And it's basically his first reef tank. So he's got a million and one questions. And he was hoping to, pick our brains. And I think it would be a really fun discussion to see somebody who's got, me coming from more of like the biology side, him coming from like the engineering side. It's cool to hear his take on things because he thinks about things a lot differently than I do. So that would be really fun. And Ian, you've never seen the tank. So I think,
no, I'm looking forward to seeing that one. Cause I'm curious if there's little things that I might borrow from what he's done. And
oh yeah,
and that, as far as upcoming episodes, we'll probably, once I get things a little more finished on a couple of projects, we'll do a little bit of a tour of some of the tanks that I've been working on as well.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And yeah. I'll try and remember to take some video and clips and whatnot as I go along with moving the store too. And we can talk about some of the challenges in moving a fish store. Cause I'm there's gotta be something wrong with me. This is,
there's something wrong with you. Yeah. I already knew something's wrong with you. I wish I could have recorded Kelly's reaction when I told her you were moving the store.
Oh yeah.
She was like, how do I even, I don't know. She was shocked. It was like she had shock on one side of her face and like totally saw it coming on the other side of her face.
You know what? It's a funny thing. It's nothing that I had been planning to do. If you'd asked me a month ago if I was doing that, we're just doing our thing. But this opportunity for the new building and some, like any business, there was room for substantial overhead savings, et cetera, et cetera. It just couldn't ignore it. So I'm like, oh, I got to dig my heels in and do this. Yeah. But man, is it a lot of work.
Yeah. So, and then I guess we'll be at the expo and we'll be filming some podcasts there. So,
yeah, looking forward to the expo. I think it's going to be fun. And like I said, with the aquatic part of it, you know, fish people, this is what we've been asking for. We've been asking for a regular, well-run show that we can go to. Unfortunately, the Niagara one is going to be no more. So this is it. Let's get behind this and turn it into what we've been looking for a long time. You know, I'm sure he'd welcome your comments, your suggestions, your input. Like I said, if there's any vendors out there, reach out. We'll put you in touch with Grant and let's turn this into the fish show that we'd all like to see in Canada.
Yep, for sure. All right. It was great catching up and look forward to the next podcast. Guys,
yeah, hopefully we're back on track a bit now. We'll try and be a little bit more regular. Things were a little crazy and hectic in everybody's lives for a while. So we're going to try and get back on track.
Yeah, if there's any, what I do want to do with some of the podcasts is just come up with a topic and dive deep, go a mile deep into it and maybe challenges for certain aspects of the reef aquarium. And we could talk just about nitrogen for an entire hour if we wanted to. We could really dive into some aspects of the aquarium, of the reef tanks that would be pretty fun to chat about. So if you guys have any opinions about what you would like to hear on the podcast, if you would like to come on the podcast, anything, if you have questions you'd like to answer on while we're here, more than happy. Any type of engagement is much appreciated. It helps us find the energy on Sunday nights when Ian's been working 200 hours a day.
We worked on the shop all day, came home, put my kids to bed, do all that whole routine, and now we're doing this. So any help that you can give for topics and whatnot, we're up for it. Because
totally.
Sometimes our brains get sidetracked.
Yeah, no kidding. But all right, until next time, that's the show.
Thanks, everybody. See you at the expo.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the For the Reef podcast. As always, you can reach us at ForTheReefPodcast@gmail.com or via our websites, ForTheReef.com or SustainableMarineCanada.ca. If you would like to get involved and help the reef restoration efforts, check out our friends at CaymanEcoDivers.com. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please hit subscribe and join us for the next episode coming soon.